Yeah. That's Gene Harris on piano and Scott Hamilton Quintet. Scott Hamilton is on tenor sax with Blues for Gene. And we're all Gene, so this music is for all of us. And it is the blues, as you will see later on. This is from their 1990 album, At Last, with Herb Ellis on guitar, Ray Brown on bass, and Harold Jones on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we pick up the pace a little bit, talking about what's our plan B, what's going on with our political situation individually and collectively. Well, it happens, as you know, that I love listening to historical tapes and so forth, and I found one that was quite remarkable in that it fell right in line with what we've been talking about, and that is specifically about the point of no return with the Democratic Party. I've maintained, as you know, that the Democratic Party has ceased, long since ceased, to be useful and a vehicle for beneficial change. One of two things needs to happen. Either it is to be destroyed by people just walking away from it and leaving it to implode on itself, or just that, let it implode and destroy itself. But either way, the Democratic Party long since has been rendered, for us at least, and for the masses of people, I should say irredeemable. There's no way to fix this. It is so out of sync. It is so out of touch with what most people are experiencing. And in fact, it has inculcated, with the Republicans running a very close second here. But the Democratic Party has just gone above and beyond the point of tolerance for corruption and for ineptness and for essentially bamboozling people. And all the more reason that we should, in this point of reckoning, decide that we need to walk away from it. It is a great public service that we can perform to walk away from it. But at the same time, we have to construct something different. And whatever that different something is, it cannot in any way be allowed to mimic the methods and the philosophies and the actions of the Democratic Party, to which most people who now are very adamant about their designation as being everything except Democratic Party. They know they're not Republican. They don't want in any way to say that they're Democratic because they say they're progressive. Okay, but then there's a large group of people who still blindly and intentionally so identify with the Democratic Party no matter what. Well, I bumped into this tape from a talk by Harry Belafonte on September the 22nd, 2005. He is addressing a town hall meeting sponsored by the Congressional Black Caucus. And he's talking here about, he's conjuring up and he's bringing the audience into the private conversations that were going on during the so-called civil rights struggle. And as you know, he was within the inner circle of Martin Luther King. And he's refreshing the audience's memory and telling them what had been the nature of the discussion within this tight circle as they prepared to ramp up protests and actions with regard to the civil rights laws, particularly the Civil Rights Law of 1964, which became effective in 1965. In this talk, it was very, very jarring. You would learn and appreciate that our moment now is not new. We have been through this before, many times before. But here is one of the people involved in this struggle reminding us in 2005. And he was saying back in 2005, telling people exactly what we've been discussing today and what we've been discussing recently. The Democratic Party is of no use to people who have long struggled and given their pledge of faith to this party, hoping that the party would do something. He says the Democratic Party is responsible for creating a political, social, economic, and moral crisis in America and in many other parts of the world. The people, he says, must play a central role in setting things right through their political action and consciousness. Where have we heard this before? We've heard it many times from many leaders before. And here, I thought we would listen to what Harry Belafonte says, because there's something remarkable about this speech, and it has to do with the layout. He's talking to a packed audience, but he is flanked by two very interesting people. To his left is Hillary Clinton. To his right is Barack Obama. And he, in fact, is lecturing them, even though they were just in the U.S. Senate. They weren't running for president yet, but they definitely had their eyes on it. And he's giving them instruction, which, of course, they proceed not to take. It's a very interesting moment. So let's listen to Harry Belafonte basically reading the Riot Act in many ways to two presidential aspirants and lecturing them about the uselessness of the Democratic Party. Here we go.
Belafonte, having traveled, you've been down to Louisiana, we've seen you, haven't addressed some of these issues. What do you want to appeal to this audience to do, and to America watching this? What do we need to do to make sure that the issues that we have witnessed over the last month are not allowed to disappear? What's our charge from you?
You know, the last thing Dr. King said to me before he was murdered was in my home when we were sitting planning strategy for the Poor People's Campaign, which was on the horizon of the politics of the day. That's why he went to Memphis. And in the course of that meeting, he seemed distracted and a little under-focused. And when we asked him what was the matter, Martin said, you know, I've been thinking long and hard about our struggle. We worked tenaciously for our rights. And the culmination of all that effort will be reflected in what we've come to call the integration movement. And I sit here deeply concerned that I suspect we are leading our nation on an integration trip that has us integrating into a burning house. I don't think we quite understood how pathetic that remark was. After all, we're in the midst of a very heady moment in our struggle. We were winning on a lot of frontiers. Bull Connor had been confronted. The bus boycotts had worked. Votes were coming. Even Lyndon Baines Johnson had been struck by the spirit and got up and talked about, we shall overcome in the Congress. And for Dr. King to have been in this place at a time when we seemed to have been making great headway was a moment to pause and reflect. That reflection has taken longer than I had suspected it would, but it has certainly come to reveal itself fully when we look at the condition in which we find not only our world, but in particular, our nation. The wreckage that's taking place down in the Gulf region, in the southwest part of the United States, is not the only wreckage that exists. We have a lot of wreckages around this country. And perhaps the most distracting and perhaps the most important wreckage to take a look at is really the wreckage of the Democratic Party.
Get him to the stage.
I've been a Democrat all my life. I have no treaty with Republicans. Nor do I really seek one. But the Democratic Party was not always our friend. As a matter of fact, a lot of what we had to struggle against was in the possession and the power of Democrats who came from the South. And when we showed them the tenaciousness and the conviction and the sense of great purpose that the people of this nation had into transforming our condition, all those Democrats from the South ran off and became Republicans as an act of punishment for what we were trying to achieve as a people. And that punishment continues to play itself out. Eleanor Roosevelt was a close friend. And once sitting in Hyde Park with her, she told a story about a great black leader by the name of A. Philip Randolph. He was one of the great giants of the century, certainly one of the great thinkers. And she recalled an evening when A. Philip Randolph had been invited to a dinner at the White House. And just he, her, and the President, Franklin Roosevelt. And during the course of the dinner, the President invited Mr. Randolph to speak his thoughts. And for a long time, A. Philip Randolph held forth on every list of grievances he could think of for the people in the labor movement, for the people who were poor, for black people. And Roosevelt permitted him to hold forth without any interruption until he concluded. At the end of it, Roosevelt reached for a box of cigars, passed one around to Philip. And as he slowly lit the cigar, he turned to Philip Randolph and he said, "Philip, let me tell you, I've heard everything you've said. I've missed absolutely nothing. And there's nothing that you've said that I disagree with. And I do, in fact, have the platform to be able to make the transformation work that you're looking for. And I guess we're all looking for. I have just one request of you. And it is for you to go out and make me do it." It seems to me that there will be no loftier statements and no greater speeches to be made than have already been made. Certainly Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Fannie Lou Hamer down in Atlantic City when she challenged with the Freedom Mississippi Democratic Party. There are a lot of people who have made speeches that are as eloquent as will ever be written. And we've listened to a lot of redundancy. A lot of people who have carefully selected the phrases and applied them to the moment. What eludes us is the bankruptcy of the action itself. This poverty that our country is witnessing has never gone away. Most of the politicians I know of have visited these places of poverty. They make it their business when they're running for the highest office in this nation to go into the heart of our pain, our anguish, our indignities, and make promises only to walk into the places of power and then deny us. I guess part of the reason I'm here is to really look through the ravages of the Democratic Party and see if anything is really worth salvaging. Of course, when Dr. King said, "We're integrated into a burning house," we said to him, "What do we do about it?" He said, "We're just going to have to go out and become firemen." Well, maybe that's what my humble task is, to find the truck, get the hose, and know where to turn it on. This country reveals its moral decay every day of its existence. Our prisons, the largest prison system in the world, are filled with those who are the victims of poverty. The women who are disenfranchised, young teenage mothers, are victims of poverty. Poverty is knocking at our door all day long. It sits in the mirror for us to look in every morning. When we look at what's going on with the schools in this country, we build more prisons than we build schools. We have more young black men and women in the prisons of America than we have in the universities. Poverty is in our face all day long. Why is everybody behaving all of a sudden like this is some great revelation?
He is here? Yeah. Are they both here right now? Yeah.
And I tell you something, there's a lot of people out here who are really pissed off. We are angry, we're upset, we're sad. We hold our children, we wheel our wheelchairs, we look around for some comfort, and we don't find any. Well, we have to look to ourselves, because I think the last frontier of truth and hope in this country are the people themselves. And I think our honorable senator is absolutely right. I'm not that much interested in 06. It's just another date for a lot of rich folks and a lot of anger, and for a lot of opportunists and a lot of people to go out and do their thing yet again. I'm interested in something much bigger, something much longer, and it's going to take much more time than just 06 to fix it. You know, we look at these things in terms of sound bites and short-term efforts. It's going to take longer than that. And I think we have to serve notice that we're looking for a second party. Some people have suggested two exist. I say there's really one. It comes in various grades of difference. The American people have some decisions to make. Our foreign policy has made a wreck of this planet. I'm always in Africa. That's my business. I move among the poor. I move among the tragic. I move among those who are the victims of human and moral disaster. And when I move to these places, I see American policy written on the walls of oppression everywhere. And I occasionally see some representative from our Congress or from our government coming to visit, coming to take another look, to get some more facts, to come back and to make a report. We don't need an independent committee to find out what happened and what is happening to this country. Our last independent committee told us. And Bush and the arrogance of these people to go off again and play the same scenario because they know that we ain't going to make a difference where they want to go has to be changed. We have to give them a call to a new awakening. We know when they give a contract, a no-bid contract to Halliburton, we know what they did when they gave that contract to Halliburton in Iraq. We know what they do when they suspend minimum wage and go out and get immigrants to come in and fill, to do the dirty work. And in suspending the minimum wage, are setting black people and brown people and immigrants and men and women against one another, when we should in fact be uniting. So I would hope that while the Black Caucus celebrates this moment, while we have all these wonderful black leaders and our white progressive associates, that we would get off the rhetoric, get off the redundancy, and dig deep into this country, and let George W. Bush, let the Christian right, let a whole bunch of folks that's running away with this nation know that their legs have just been amputated. I rest my case.
Now, Harry Belafonte speaking on September the 22nd, 2005. I want to repeat, he is flanked by two very interesting people, both of them in the U.S. Senate at that time, both of them having their eyes on the White House. Both of them, the up-and-coming stars of the Democratic Party. And if that wasn't a butt-kicking, I don't know what is. He called it. He talked about supporting the Democratic Party is like integrating into a burning house. The party has ceased to be useless, to be useful. And he used the word a new awakening. I used the word a reckoning. This is the year of reckoning. Because clearly his words did not resonate with Barack Obama or with Hillary Clinton. One who eventually came to be president based on the strength of the black vote, not exclusively the black vote, but primarily the black vote, and support for the Democratic Party that he just said was like integrating with a burning house. The other just got defeated. She was trying to defeat Barack Obama, but she did not succeed there. Now, it was to Trump she turned her Democratic wrath. But they all play the same game. He right there gave them a mandate. The mandate being to serve the people, to bring the Democratic Party to the point, to bring it around to understanding what its real purpose should be, could be. But he said he took us all the way back to the Roosevelt administration, where the then president, said to be such a great friend to the working class, and to black folk, said, I agree with everything you just said. I don't disagree with a thing. Now you have to make me do it. And we have that attitude in the Democratic Party today. Blacks, Latinos, working people are useful to the Democratic Party simply as pawns in a big game. The game is for power. The game is absolutely for money. Money and power. And that's why he says that they need to be told at some point, when the people get serious, your legs have been amputated. You're finished. This is an extraordinary speech. For one thing, it predates by 11 years the circumstances we're dealing with today. He says, what we need is a second party. Because he says there's no difference. And he was talking again in 2005. There's no difference between the parties. We need a second party. Today we describe them as the third party option. Regarding the duopoly as the Democrats and the Republicans. But we clear also that he had nailed that too. There is no difference between them. Whatever differences there are, those differences are cosmetic, not structural. That same president, the senator to his right, Barack Obama, that he was talking to, and he was talking to him, he was talking to Hillary Clinton, he was talking to the Democratic Party, and he was talking to these loyalists. But that senator, who then became president, was history's most warring president. The person principally responsible for the last 8 years for wreaking havoc all over the world with war, although he talked about peace. He's a president of peace. A peace of Iraq, a peace of Afghanistan, a peace of all these other countries that he has bombed to smithereens. This wonderful, peaceful president. The other aspirant to Belafonte's left, Hillary Clinton, can't tolerate the idea that she hasn't had an opportunity to start her own wars, her branding. I'm the first woman president to start even more wars than all these men. And that's what we got from the Democratic Party. And this is why we talk about these things, because these are all connected. And we should have learned these lessons by now. It's not for lack of information or nobody saying anything. It is that we refuse to do something about it. And when I criticize the so-called third parties, it's not because I'm evil, although there are people who think I am. It's not because I'm being contentious. It is because the need is so intense. He talked about that too. He talked about the fact that people are looking for comfort. People are looking for comfort from some political entity. It's not about just getting votes. That's my point, exactly my point. Just yesterday, we talked about the fact that people feel betrayed. The election is over and everybody's headed to the high hills and to the tall grass. When their investment has already been made in a losing proposition that leaves them out to dry. Until the next time. We can't operate this way, and we can't possibly think that this is going to give us some kind of a political defense. It's not going to do that for us. And that's why I shared this with you. I listened to this thing and I said, my God, this is incredible. This is what we've been talking about. Every point he made, we have talked about it. And that is not, by the way, a cause for celebration. It is alarming because the sentiments expressed by Harry Belafonte are 11 years old. And there were many people before him who must have said the same things. But I thought it was particularly significant, particularly instructive, that he said these things in the presence of two political people. At the time, both serving in the U.S. Senate, at a time both contemplating a run for the presidency, and he was literally giving them instruction, which they proceeded to dismiss. Not important. And we see, in fact, the exact opposite in their actions. The exact opposite of what he was talking about. He talked about this, the spreading, the United States being more and more identified with spreading crises all over the world. Misery. And from Democratic administrations, more so than from the Republican ones in recent years. And we just got a signal, didn't we? The Democratic Party is retooling. It captured Bernie, and it's retooling for more war. It's retooling to prop up Hillary Clinton. And its leader is Charles Schumer of Brooklyn. Well, you don't have to ask where these efforts are going and what they're aiming to do. So I will leave it right here for the moment. And I will entertain your calls at 888-874-4888. As you listened to this, I want to ask you, how do you relate the message? Is it getting through that you got to do something? We all have to do something to get this defense mechanism in some kind of working order, because without it, we are doomed. And I'm not trying to be, melodramatic here. It's just a fact. The Democratic Party clearly is not a good option. And precisely at a time when we need, as he said, the second party, or as we've been calling it, the third party option. Where is the third party option? Okay. 888-874-4888. We'll take this break and come back to your questions and observations right after that. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. And we just got a political education from the Honorable Harry Belafonte. And he was talking about the increasing irrelevance and uselessness of the Democratic Party, the need to find a different, he called it a second party, because he said the Republican Party and the Democratic Party is pretty much the same, with varying degrees of very slight differences, but that our job is at hand, and it is at hand. The job that is at hand is our job, our responsibility. The people, he said, must form the frontier of truth and hope. Couldn't agree more with that. Your calls at 888-874-4888 from Wisconsin. Habu, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Ms. Leed, and thank you very much for this opportunity. And before I go on, I just want to mention that I'm wishing you and your audience a lovely Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your call and for your sentiments. Thank you so much. It means a lot to me when the audience recognizes and salutes fellow listeners. It's a wonderful thing. Thank you so much.
I didn't listen to all of this, but all of the was it Harry Belafonte?
Yes.
That he played? I know he's a giant of a person, and even spoke so derisively of General Colin Powell. But anyway, that aside, I will go and listen to it later on tonight. I just want to say this: both parties have let us down, as you say. And I think there's a turning point. We've come to a turning point in American politics, and that being that this time, and not that it is superior, but this time I think Trump supporters are really going to hold his feet to the fire. And that is the beginning of change. Now, let's hope they do it. But they're quite passionate about it because there's no alternative. Just as Margaret Thatcher used to say, Tina, there is no alternative. And they recognize it, but, you know, some of these movements only get going when a certain segment of our society initiate them, and because they have the most to lose. But anyway, if that happens, then perhaps this is, the beginning of something where these politicians are going to be forced to listen to the electorate. That's all I have to say.
But in the meantime, what about this point that he made, the point that irrespective of the parties themselves and what they choose to do to alleviate the suffering of the masses of people, what do you see? Do you see any immediate response by what he called a second party to come to fruition in such a way, with such force behind it, that it could actually cause these changes to happen?
You know, that is something that I would have to think deeply about, but let me just give you my off-the-cuff answer. Some of these things, you know, things happen, in a way, change is sometimes comes about by necessity being the mother of invention, meaning that sometimes things are so dire that, you know, even if some party is not constructed properly and everything is, you know, all the angles are correct or what have you, they just come into being. Why? Because there's no leadership there. There's a vacuum, and they're pushed there with all their imperfections. So I'm more of a believer that some of these changes are ad hoc. They have to meet a need that is not being addressed by the government. I don't know these things well, but this would be my instinct. And, you know, let me just say this. This time, these people are really serious. I mean, if Trump thinks he's going to have a nice time, you know, sitting in his towers and, you know, addressing his properties without addressing the people's needs, he's going to be in for a rude surprise, as best as I can tell.
Now, when you say the people, are you talking about his political base, or are you talking across the board, America?
Listen, I don't mean to be, ethnocentric, but in many ways that, and these people, I don't believe are necessarily racist. They may be so, but, you know, jobs have left this country. They're outsourcing jobs. They're insourcing migrants. Not that I'm against people like that, but and it's taking the floor of the wage level lower and lower and lower. And meanwhile, these people talk about everything is well in America when 100 million people of working age do not have full-time jobs. And so I believe in this. What Kennedy said, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. So even if his group bring about change, I don't think they want to only have their own people there, but they, you know, that will bring up everybody. Now, yes, it's kind of selfish, but it accomplishes the a need at hand.
Well, thank you for your views and for contributing and for getting us started today. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you. Have a lovely weekend.
Thank you. You too. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved.
Hello.
Good afternoon, my dear beloved sister. How are we?
I'm hanging in there.
You got me in a lot of trouble. You got me in a lot of trouble. Everybody in my neighborhood wants to kill me. My coworkers want to kill me. Everybody wants to kill me. Because I had said that I wouldn't vote for Italy. You know, I said, I'm not. I can't vote for her because I knew what she did. Even people within I have a circle, but that I'm the leader of that circle. Even within my circle, the next day they called me. Glenn called me and said, "Where do we go from here?" But in my infinite wisdom, I saw the need for the destruction of the Democratic Party. But I never saw Trump would win. I said, "Wait a minute, I couldn't answer this question." But then I thought about it. I said, "Oh, that's not a real problem because we've been there before." And he's just talking. And as a matter of fact, I was very happy that Hillary lost because Trump is a blessing to us. After I thought about the whole situation, he's a blessing to us because if he has his way, the hatred and the contempt that he has for African people, he'll stick all of us in the microwave. And like jerk chicken, they'll hit the jerk button. Say maybe 20 million of us. And once he does that, guess what? We're going to say, wait a minute, something's wrong here. No, we can't have that. And from my judgment, from my position, we'll rise up and say, wait a minute, no. No, you can't do this. That will force us to begin to respect one another, protect one another, and work together. It's very simple.
In the aftermath of the election, that people are really getting clearer and clearer about the political options and doing something to contribute toward something that would help defend us all?
Absolutely. Because, you know, the working class is taking away everything from everybody. So now we got he's got our attention. We have no other choice but to organize. So he will stimulate a movement that the world has never seen when it comes to climate change and so many other things. The economic condition. All of these things will force us to protect one another and begin to let that gang, you call it a government. As far as I'm concerned, it's a crime syndicate. It will force us to get rid of these people.
It's organized crime. Well, thank you for calling in and for contributing today. Good to hear from you. Thanks so much, Willie.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Love you, too. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello, hello. Nice to talk with you, Eutrice.
Same here. How are you feeling?
I've got a big problem here because I can't understand why people can't wrap it around their heads that this duopoly, this one party broken into two divisions, is a capitalist party run by oligarchs, and there's no possible way to reform it to meet the interests of the masses of people. People have to get to that point where they understand there's no reformation that can be made. I know we're up against all the propaganda that is in schools and in the media and whatnot, and people constantly talking about so-called democracy, and this is really not a democracy, and people don't understand that. This is the big problem. Those parties have to be thrown into the dustbin. What is happening is very clear to me. The capitalist parties run by the oligarchs are going to just do things enough in the area of placating people, or in some cases, giving palliative care to the masses. So there's no future in thinking you're going to reform the Republican and Democratic Party. Things, in order to really change things, they're going to get to the point where they can't placate people anymore, and that's when you're going to have some kind of force among the people that is powerful enough to make the changes to run this country in the interests of the people rather than the oligarchs.
Do you see any signals that we're getting there?
There are some small signals, and that's good. Some of the rebellions, but it has to be a lot more because, it's not, those in power, the oligarchs, they're not going to just change over. Their goal is one thing, to make a profit for themselves. That's why you have half the people in the country are poor and they're poor. They're not going to just move over. They never have enough. They're ferocious beasts. They're lions and tigers, and they're not going to become vegetarians. Why do people think they can change the Democratic Party when it's in control of these vicious people?
When do you think we will see some evidence that people are becoming more and more clear, and what shape might it take?
Well, as I see it, being that Trump has got his way into the White House, he might start doing the things that the ruling class wants to get more profit for themselves. People are going to start getting more and more miserable. People are being getting to older age, and they're going to have less. Or they're going to chip away at everything with all these policies that fatten the bank accounts of the corporations. They're going to just squeeze people more and more. And I think that's coming, especially with Trump getting into the White House. He's going to take advantage and do whatever he can to do the destruction of the social programs, such as Social Security and Medicare and so forth, and make it tougher and tougher for the people. And that's when we're going to get to the stage of having more and more rebellions. It's got to get rougher for people before they can be placated by the crumbs that are thrown at them.
Thank you, David, for your call today. Ali, you'll be the last caller. We coming up close to the hour.
Okay. Hi, my professor. How are you doing?
Hello, fellow professor. How are you?
I'm not doing as well as you, but I'm hanging in there. And I wanted to say hello to all the listeners of PRN right now.
Thank you.
Before I make my comment, that I know I don't have that much time, I just wanted to tell everyone that on Black Friday, we had to change the name to the White Friday. One of my group, we're going to be at Herald Square, 34th Street, and 6th Avenue, where 6th and Broadway, they meet right at Macy's at 4 o'clock. Can you please, people, you call to always have your comment, but, you know, participate. Come and join the fight. Don't always call just to listen to yourself. Come and fight. What are we doing this? We're doing because we are demanding that people stop buying the Trump brand. And one of them is Ivanka Trump's line. We're asking people, demanding that he return those jobs to the United States. Those are the first jobs that he should be returning. He should be making those the closing line in here, in New York. I mean, not in New York, in the United States. So if he's going to do that, those are the first jobs that he should bring in here. So we're going to be there at 4 o'clock at Herald Square at 34th Street on Friday, okay, at 4 p.m. Please come join us. This is what I wanted to say from that Belafonte, even though I didn't listen to the whole speech. One of the things that surprised me the most was that he actually was talking to Hillary right there next to him when he was talking about mass incarceration. Uh-huh. And all these people that they are in there and why they are there. And he was talking to her. And it just surprised me that he also was talking, even though at that time he was not a president, he was talking to Obama. Because Obama went to Chicago, and he was talking about the neighborhood, how these people, they go to our neighborhood, they come to our neighborhood asking for our vote, and then destroyed us. And this is what Obama did in Chicago. As a matter of fact, when he won his first election, his speech was given in Chicago. And what did he do? He put Emmanuel in his cabinet, and then the men went to Chicago and had closed all the schools, destroying the education system in Chicago. And what happened? And where do these people, they go next? Where he was talking about mass incarceration to our prison system. So he actually was talking to a man, a very calculative man, who had done all these things to us. What am I doing? This one of the first things that I'm doing, this story about know my president, we're going to have to accept that this man is our president. But we would have to do what one group of mine, we meet on Sunday, you have to see the outspoken and how people, they wanted to do something now. For the first time, I had never seen so many energetic people that wanted to join other group and wanted to do something. And this is why I agreed with Willie. This is the first time that I see people so energized that they wanted to do something. Yes, Willie, we're gonna burn, but we already dark. The white's gonna burn with us, with this government. So don't worry about it. Yes, I get the same treatment by a lot of people. They think that I'm crazy. And when this guy won, now they look at me and what is next? What is next? All of us gonna be in the same path. Black, white, yellow. And we're going to receive the same thing, the same treatment. It's about time that we stop talking and move on and get into an action like the people in North Dakota fighting for that water. This is what we have to do.
Thank you. Time to go out. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for your call. That brings us to the end of the program today. And, you know, I so value our ability to talk to each other and to talk things out, because that's one of the best ways to help us along toward some kind of clarity about where we are and what we ought to be doing. So thank you all for such valuable contributions today. Now, I'm not going to be on tomorrow. Nobody else is going to be on tomorrow on the air. So you will probably hear a repeat program tomorrow. But certainly on Friday, we return to our open forum, Free Your Mind Friday, and we continue the conversation. So until then, have yourselves a good Thanksgiving, those of you who do that, and enjoy the company of family and friends who bring positive dimension to your life. We'll come back to meet to each other on Friday. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your esteemed company. Bye-bye. Thank you.